name is Michael McCusker. Happy 2025. A quarter century into this still brand new millennium. So it is once more a moment for New Year's resolutions. And I must admit these are repeat hopes previously articulated on this program, annually, I might add, and perhaps into perpetuity. First on the list might be a resolution to re-educate yourself and critically examine the fundamentals and history of human rights. Resolve to refuse fables of racial and national supremacy might be the next resolution. Resolve to stand firm against a despotic attempt to reinstate a neo-despotic patriarchy. Resolve to refute current notions that the opposition does not have the right to exist. Resolve to assist together a society threatened with dissolving into disorder and inequality by Yankee Doodle apartheid. Resolve that if chaos and disorder devolve upon society by bigoted cleansing campaigns to retain democracy in the home and in the neighborhood and community. Resolve to not allow and to personally intercede when the essentials of democratic life are threatened. Remember, we have the absolute right to defend our rights. Resolve to understand implicitly that a majority begins with one and flows outward. Resolve to resist one party and or one religion rule in this overwhelmingly multicultural nation, which would destroy democracy more surely than the cancer of onerous economic inequality. Resolve to return the term populist to its rightful definition of the people, which has been tarnished and soiled by right-wing absolutists who wish to eradicate governance by the people and simultaneously resolve to remove the elitist stigma of the term progressive. Resolve to defeat tyranny masked within democracy. Resolve to bear witness to local oppression. Resolve to not be bullied even by the most dangerous and spiteful. Resolve to personally stick up for the rights and persons of those prejudiced against. Resolve to resist the so-called security state that protects the ruling class by suppressing the rights of the people. Resolve to resist a registry of Muslims or any other religion, race, minority, or opposition. Resolve to show up at protests against the hijacking of democratic government. Write letters, send emails, tweet, and speak out whenever and wherever necessary. Resolve to donate and participate in progressive causes. Work in campaigns for local, state, and national progressive candidates. Resolve to keep your head and convictions when others might temporize their own. Resolve to not be pushed around by bullies who think they have a mandate to sow and reap fear. Resolve to refute petty demagogues who will try to shout you down. Resolve to resist or shake off complacency. This is no time for it. Resolve to organize against the anti-democratic purge of not only the external forms of democracy, but also the explicit deterioration of its substance. Resolve to resist the resurgence of the nuclear arms race. We are past that insanity. Resolve to resist government and corporate oppression at work. Revive unions. Resolve to resist government control of information and suppression of a free press or any other form of speech, thought, or media. never forget that the First Amendment is the real guardian of all the other rights and liberties guaranteed by constitutional government. Resolve to resist privatization of education. Public education preserves democracy. Resolve to resist denial of women's rights and equality. Male superiority is a sick joke. Resolve to fight for women's reproductive rights and resist attempts to abolish Roe versus Wade. Half the human race subjugating the reproductive half is ridiculously counterproductive. Resolve to resist racial, sexual, and ethnic slurs and attacks against anybody. Resolve to not remain silent when someone spouts racist, sexual, or ethnic remarks. Resolve to resist attempts to abolish environmental standards and fight to increase them for the health and preservation of our descendants and the world they will inhabit. Resolve to resist climate change denial and those who speciously espouse that denial. Resolve to ardently support affordable and competent health care for everybody. Resolve to support gun control and restraints upon those who may possess firearms, especially open carry laws and posse comitatus style militia armament. Resolve to demand restraints upon upper class wealth accumulation. Resolve to insist on limits of corporate influence over laws and politics. Resolve to uphold fair laws and resist unjust and prejudicial laws. And those are resolutions for this year, 2025. And now, something else I've written, Strangling Democracy, with a quote by Dan Armstrong from his book, Prairie Fire. Verification of the basic Malthusian premise, the earth can only support so many people, but with a critical new twist, Western capitalism positioning for it instead of trying to avert it. And that was by my old friend Dan Armstrong from his book, Prairie Fire. The United States is a democracy because it is a necessary contrast to despotic chaos. We have inherited a few basic rights and liberties sought by the mass of humanity for millennia, as well as a few limits on power to restrain the predatory ambitions of many among us. The hard right military industrial Tories are quite probably the people our ancestors warned us against and attempted to prevent their future usurpation of power with constitutional government and separation of powers, as well as with the Bill of Rights, the secular Ten Commandments of our civilization. The real issue is the disparity of wealth, which complicates and corrupts every other issue. A few white men of wealth have made an intolerable grab for power and ordination of a country club apartheid that has severely eroded the basic fiber of democracy. They have looted the public treasury of billions while increasing poverty, joblessness, as well as legal and political savagery, and their short-sighted avarice has not only bankrupted the nation, it has burdened generations with a crippling debt that will further limit options and freedoms for millions of yet unborn citizens. It is the wealthy, whose affluence is to a major degree based on money paid by the poor and middle class, the incessantly impoverished, who are the real revolutionaries, because they are the source of the dissolution of the society that indulges their insatiable and arrogant avarice. Politicians who are supposed to represent the people are just political real estate for rent or lease. The plutocrats getting richer on the upward flow of money due to continual tax breaks and government contracts, divert the nation's wealth to offshore bank accounts, and like old Romans, exploit the new world order that has risen on the ruins of collapsed Soviet communism. They are the world's real rulers now. They have divided nations into corporate colonies, buying and selling public governments for private capital like Wall Street stocks. Their mega corporations act toward each other as irresponsibly aggressive and avariciously jealous as nations used to do. The country is rapidly retrogressing from a diversely construed democracy centered on the rule of common folk to an aristo-plutocracy of billionaires and immense multinational corporations, which the Supreme Court has defined as persons, quote unquote. The USA is at a crossroads as severe and consequential as the Civil War, a crisis that will define its future as a nation and society, either as a corporate oligarchy administered by questionably elected figureheads, or an open society as envisioned in its most fundamental beliefs and laws, as well as a leading member of a world confederacy of presumably eventual democracies. Periods of national crisis reveal the real impotency of average citizens who have very little input other than letters or email to elected representatives whose interests are at the very least distracted by powerfully unelected elites who more often than not initiate the crises. The societal ceiling is cracking over our heads, and it is up to us, common, ordinary citizens who live in neighborhoods and communities, who are ultimately responsible to prevent the sky from falling down around us. Individual voices are obviously not nearly enough. They are lost, diluted, neglected, certainly diffused. Only through groups, associations, and political parties is there any sense of personal influence. Yet with each successive level, even these are persistently diluted and essentially marginalized to evaporation. A level to reflect the personal voice must be closer to home, a community voice. Cities and communities are not simply parochial entities concerned only with schools, sewers, streets, and strip malls. They are also integral parts of a political whole and represent the American citizen at home and work. So whose democracy is it? Bernard Sanders, U.S. Senator from Vermont and Congress's only socialist, has an answer. If democracy is going to survive in this country, tens of millions of poor and working class people are going to have to see the connection between their economic condition and the political process. They must vote not for the lesser of two evils, but for jobs, income, health care, and the dignity to which they, as human beings, are entitled. Only when that occurs will American democracy become revitalized, quote unquote. In other words, the only way to save democracy is with more democracy, and by keeping a balance between conflicting factions to allow none of them to attain such power as to be capable of suppressing or persecuting the rest. Democracy begins at home. And now, Make a New Year's Resolution to Fight Trump by Michelle Goldberg. And she wrote this for the New York Times. Shortly after Donald Trump was elected in 2016, I spoke to a friend in Istanbul about my boundless horror, and while I can't remember the exact words she said in response, they amounted to, "Welcome to my world," quote unquote. I told her about all the protests breaking out, and she gently warned me not to get my hopes up. She had also demonstrated against Turkey's authoritarian president, Recep Tayyip Erdogan, she said, but eventually those protests had died out, and ours would too. Over the next 4 years, I was often relieved that her prediction hadn't come true. The resistance, as the broad alliance of anti-Trump Americans came to be known, never flagged. An obvious reason for its endurance is that Americans enjoy robust civil rights protections that the opponents of ruling regimes in many other countries do not. Despite my friend's generous empathy, there was, in fact, no real comparison between our situations. While Trump demonized journalists, Erdogan imprisoned them. In the absence of serious state repression, Trump's critics rarely had to hide their sentiments, making it easier to maintain hope that they, and not their freakish madman of a president, represented this country's future. I fear that in the second Trump administration, it will be much harder to keep the faith. The first Trump presidency seemed like a grotesque accident, a civic disaster that befell us because we were too blithely arrogant to see it coming. Trump redo, however, is something we are lurching toward with eyes wide open. Right now, general election polls are blaring like sirens. And that was by Michelle Goldberg. And now, something again I wrote. Humanity will either obliterate humanity or preserve it. An indication that the species might be worth preserving will be its courage to try. A species' extinction might begin when increasing numbers of its members lose hope for themselves and their future, when they stop their inner clocks because they perceive life as unbearable or useless. Some lasting effect might be a result of this hopelessness, a decline, a loss of energy and will, and the cleverness indispensable for survival. The human race is not unlike any other life form that has lived temporarily on Earth. Like its individual members, the species must eventually die, and like a person, it can die at any age or stage of its development. The richness of its past, its dreams or schemes, its successes and failures, none of these is a case against death. The very quality that forced human rule over the Earth, our ruthless and intelligent violence, is the obstacle to our continued existence. We differ from our extinct predecessors in that our threatened oblivion is from our own industry and in the possibility that we might overcome our history and survive a while longer. Though it lasted less than a generation, the armistice of World War I was a hope that humanity's addiction to warfare must finally end because war had become too horrible to bear. Ironically, that hope accompanied the larger fears of nuclear annihilation during the Cold War, that a balance of terror made war obsolete. That balance, horrible as it was, is considered preferable to the post-Cold War uncertainty of a wild card nuclear club that has been released from the restraints of collective oblivion. Rogues are unfettered. We cannot uninvent nuclear weapons. The knowledge of them is with us for as long as Homo sapiens defies its own handicaps and dwells in the galaxy. If we are not smart enough to contain our atomic goblin, our ruined cities will leave no trace that we once briefly and foolishly ruled Earth. There is nothing more political than the wish of the human race to survive upon its home planet. Thomas Jefferson wrote that the care of human life and happiness, and not their destruction, was the first and only legitimate object of good government. The power of the vote was a recognition by his founder peers that the usual relationship between citizen and ruler is hostility. the question of whether the United States is any longer or ever has been an open government must not overshadow the real fact that it still must generally and eventually respond to essential demands of its majority. A majority begins with one. It is the great mass of ordinary people who will and must prevent world suicide. It must be done by everyone, beginning with each one. Each of us will die, either privately or as part of the extinction of the species, if we do not arrest the dangers of nuclear violence. There are good reasons we must each die, primary among them, to make room and leave a few resources for our descendants. What is different now is that we must step outside our small fears and immediate prejudices and ensure a world for our inheritors. There has never been a more personal or more universal struggle in our history. This is Michael McCusker. Joanne Rideout is engineer for this program. However much Donald Trump dreams and schemes himself as a Caesar or a Hitler, he is instead an incompetent neo-dictator, a Nero, a Mussolini. Rather than Big Brother, we have Big Blather. Happy New Year, 2025, and reject Trump's Project 2025.
You've been listening to A Story Told on KMUN, featuring Michael McCusker, journalist, activist, former firefighter, and Vietnam veteran. Michael has been sharing essays and poetry on A Story Told since 1987. For 30 years, he published the North Coast Times-Eagle newspaper out of his home in Astoria, Oregon. Michael currently shares his work and the works of other authors from his home on the Central Oregon coast. Join us here next week for A Story Told.